Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the political center. I'm in the studio today with Jim DeBacchus on the political left.
Hi, Natalie.
And Dan McKay on the political right.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
I want to talk about what everybody's talking about, and that is the outrage over immigrant children being separated from their parents at the border. There's a lot of breaking news on this, but let's start with our Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox, who, in a way that only Spencer Cox will do, started tweeting in the evening, late in the evening, after midnight.
1:24 in the morning.
About his disgust with this policy. He said some very clever, you know, things in his tweets, but got a lot of national attention for it. Let's talk about it. Jim?
Can't sleep tonight. I know I shouldn't tweet, but I'm angry and sad. He did that at 1:24 a.m. Hate what we've become. My wife wants to go and hold babies and read to lonely, scared, sad kids. I want to punch someone. Political tribalism is stupid, it sucks, and it's dangerous. We're all part of the problem.
That was the opening tweet.
Yeah. Now tell me how the average Republican in Utah responds to that. Because you've got some people that are going to be furious, and you got some that are going to like it. I don't know if that's a plus politically or a negative.
I think most people say, Jim, your tribe is messed up. And then I think there, well, and then yeah, the other group says, well, your tribe's messed up. I think that's the lieutenant governor's point is everybody is so focused on who's at fault, and nobody's actually focused on solutions. And to that point, I think he said something very well that I think most people can't really capture.
But Mia Love and Chris Stewart
have been saying that's a bad idea for 2 weeks.
But went halfway. You know, they were kind of there, but they wouldn't look Trump in the eye and say, stop this, stop this. That's the difference.
I loved it when the lieutenant governor said in a tweet, ask, how would I react if the other party did this before forming an opinion? It just shows how the craziness of our political times has made it so sometimes you don't even know which ideology is pushing it. And in this case, thankfully, the breaking news is that the Trump administration has said it's going to implement an executive order to detain families together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a dose of reason, Dan.
Yeah. You can see, though, when you look at the policy, just take off your family hat for just a second. You can see the
your
policy.
Human hat.
Yeah, your human hat. And just put on your cyborg, I'm the law hat.
Right.
I get that. But, you know, if you're Data from Star Trek, The Next Generation, right? Put on your Data hat and you say, but the law says adults and children can't be contained together. Well, then, what must happen is they must be contained separately, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, to Jim's point, you have to put back on your human hat and say, well, mom and dad seem important with the kids. Here's the thing that's been shocking to me about the way the whole thing is rolled out. I don't think there's any party, anybody on any side of the party that thinks it is a good idea. What is lost in this whole deal is, and this is the part I think is shocking, is, you know, no one would say, take off the familial ties. No one would say, put those kids over there with criminals. No one would say that. No one would say that's a good idea, right? And yet, here we are, we're in the same situation, and everybody's saying, well, we need to make sure the children and their parents aren't lost. So I can understand from a justice standpoint where they're at, but you've got to put on that human element. Otherwise, policy in a bubble does stupid things like this. This is not new to the Trump regime. It isn't new to all, you know, Republicans, Democrats. Mm-hmm. It's not a new concept. Everyone does stupid stuff with the law.
Dan, do you read anything into some of the comments that have been made that Trump's using this as a bargaining chip to get his border wall? And I'll read to you something that Attorney General Sessions said. He said, if we build the wall, if we pass legislation to end the lawlessness, we won't face these terrible choices.
Well, is he wrong?
Well, I guess I'm asking the question.
You're asking the bargaining chip element, and I'm saying his statement's not wrong. And maybe what you're saying is executives don't make statements like that when they're not posturing, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's unfortunate that we all see that motive. I don't think what Sessions is saying is incorrect. We've got to stop the lawlessness out there. We cannot continue under the current track we are. just isn't tenable.
Locally, LDS Church comes
out with
Ron
Mortensen to go help straighten out our immigration
laws. Goodness, let's get to that in a minute. But
okay, sorry.
Locally, LDS Church, you know, came out with a statement urging our elected officials to you know, not do this. I think the Catholic Diocese of Salt Lake City spoke out against the policy. So, and Mia Love, you know, did some good things. She was pushing for a provision of the immigration bill to end the policy.
What about the argument, just to be on the other side for a minute, what about the other side of the argument? The logical side of this argument says, okay, it's really grim now, but let the word go forth, don't come here. And this is one way to deter people from coming, so you will stop the whole next generation from having to make that trip from Guatemala to the border, and you will, you'll say, I can't even make that argument.
I don't believe it.
My heart's not in it.
you know what else is hard about it is, and this, you know, gets to, you know, what Dan and I should be talking about on the conservative side, but we need these people.
Yep. The economic driver behind this is...
We have a labor shortage in this country, particularly in hourly, you know... jobs.
I heard from a very wise person recently that our job growth was around 3.5% this last year or this last month, right?
Yeah.
And when you're looking at a 3.5 and you have an unemployment rate below 3, we're struggling to find people.
Yeah, this is where
my daughter, she's 16,
crazy.
She has two jobs and she has another employer begging her to come work.
Yeah.
This wouldn't appear to be the time to be deporting people. We have that. We have a $3 billion project on the west part of the city. If you try to get people to help you with construction or things, it's almost impossible to get people to show up. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. This is the time to be saying everybody out of the pool.
Yeah, crazy stuff. Hey, I also want to, before we go to break, let's just talk about Governor Gary Herbert standing up and opposing the nomination of Ron Mortensen. Dan, I'm going to ask you to give a little bit of the background on Ron Mortensen. I only briefly know him, but he was nominated to head the Refugee Immigration Program at the State Department. And at least in the work that I've done with Ron, he's always had an incredibly strident anti-immigration posture. And I should be careful, anti-illegal immigration posture.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's not, everyone is supportive of the legal, I guess. But why would a sitting governor, I know why, but I want Dan to explain it. Why would a sitting governor oppose a Utahn nominated to be in a Senate-confirmed position in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I can only think that Governor Herbert's, I'm trying to read into the mind and motivation, right? Governor Herbert just genuinely believes that this person isn't the right person for the job. Right. And I can look at, you know, and how does the Trump administration react to that? Right. The Herbert administration has not been terribly friendly to the president.
Yeah.
Remember when the president came to visit Utah, they blew off the governor's office and went through the speaker of the House's office.
And so you've got a lieutenant governor that's not very popular with the Trump administration, a governor that's not very popular. And I would suggest that maybe even some of the policy people around the governor
and you've got
known to the Trump administration as not very favorable.
And you've got a speaker who's very popular. I mean,
with the
Trump administration and also a president of the Senate who've done very well. I mean, we're going to be in Washington, D.C. tomorrow to meet with staff from the White House, and the speaker set it up and the president invited people and the executive branch wasn't invited.
Interesting. I want to hear more about that, but will you comment on Ron Mortensen?
Yeah, look at this. Yeah. I mean, this is the most sensitive job. This is the man who would have been in charge of all of these children and taking care of them. And to put a guy who was against the Utah Compact, this is a man who does not do well with refugees. The governor did the right thing. Heaven help immigrants if Ron Mortensen is the face of goodness in the State Department.
Okay. But you saw...
I was going to transition, but you get one more word here.
But you saw out of the EU this last year, or just this last week, the EU is now looking at immigration policies that are more strict and more stringent for refugees. And why? Because they've had more than 10,000 deaths and injuries specifically related in the last year related to the refugees coming into their various countries. And they're saying, look, we've got to do a better job of ferreting out those who are here for political reasons, those who are here for economic reasons, and those who are just here. And I will say, I think this is leading to an advanced conversation, and President Trump is doing it as well, that if your own nation isn't treating you well, that doesn't necessarily rise to the fact that you need to leave. you need to rise up and kind of change the administration. You need to be involved in whatever the progressive change is. Human rights violations and everything else are unacceptable, and we need to be there to help support them in a lot of ways in their nation. Ron, on the other hand, I don't know. I don't know how he got the nomination. We was talking to another person today up on the Hill. I do not know, but it did give me great hope that someday I could be nominated to something, because heaven knows
how Ron got there.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm with Jim DeBacchus and Dan McKay. In our next segment, we'll talk about the Inland Port Authority Board. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
This is Dan McKay on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, which, by the way, the Society for Professional Journalists Utah chapter recognized Both Sides of the Aisle as an outstanding public affairs program.
Yes. We won an award.
Congratulations to our producer, Emily Means.
Right.
And to you guys. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, look, let's be honest, Jim. It's really the two of them that kind of keep this thing alive.
We got to admit that, don't we?
The women in the house.
Yeah.
I've been on vacation, and I was out of town when all the news broke about the Inland Port Authority Board having its first meeting. And apparently it was sort of a, what do you say, it didn't really happen.
Disaster?
It was not a good thing. Four of the 11 members hadn't submitted their conflict of interest forms.
Eh, what do those things matter?
Everybody believed that they were going to, like, elect a chair and maybe make progress on executive director. And instead, it just ended up being a nothing burger, as my kids would call it.
Mm.
What happened, guys? What is the status? What's going on?
I think the speaker and the governor are playing a power pull there. I mean, the governor showed up at the meeting, and it was just interesting. I walked in for some of it. I had some other committee hearings, but I think it was a big power play, and they decided, okay, we're going to punt this down. They'll be in the back rooms
deciding
stuff.
Which means that nobody won.
Nobody won.
Play.
No, I think
it was
all
a nil-nil World Cup tie.
A little bit. The governor was gone in or went in there. I think he expected some things to happen, and I don't know, but we'll see.
Dan, can you give us any insight
on the
speaker's mindset about this port authority? I ask that because I've been frustrated that we don't really know what this is. Like, you could have an inland port that's a little small thing. You could have an inland port that's a big thing, you know, just in terms of the volume of traffic and what it does. And depending on what it is, it'll have dramatically different economic impacts, fiscal impacts,
sure,
air quality impacts, congestion, traffic impacts.
And but right now, you have a lot of politics, right? Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest
We're letting
problem.
The politics lead when we should be letting the substance and the merits and the analysis lead.
Why do that? Jim has shown us the way. We are not going to let substance get in the way of politics.
Why wouldn't Governor Herbert sign an executive
Come on, Jim,
order
that's good.
Asking his departments that have a lot of, you know, influence on this, mm-hmm. UDOT, Department of Transportation,
yeah.
Environmental Quality.
And be looking at these issues.
Right.
Let's go back to the legislature. That's where the fault lies. They came up with a bill. They came up with a, let's get an authority. Let's start building. Let's spend millions of dollars. And then, oh, yeah, let's do a plan and decide what we ought to do. What should have happened is there should have been a commission that was named to say, all right, there's the land. How are we going to govern it? What are we going to build there? What are the constraints based on the environment and the Great Salt Lake being? But no, they have ready, fired, and now they're aiming. And that's what happens when you do this. And that's only when I marched in, when it was so clear that it was a big mess.
Ready, fire, aim.
Yeah, I'll say that's what Jim, that's how, you know, I understand, Jim. I understand that feeling. What I will say is, frequently, just because you don't understand the rifle and you don't understand the aim, that doesn't mean it wasn't aimed and it wasn't fired.
All right, there you go.
So I would say that there is a lot of time between now and when the Inland Port is executed and is successful. I have full faith that it's going to get off the ground and get running. And some of these questions will be answered.
Yeah.
They may not be in the order that we prefer. And, you know, bless Natalie's academic heart. We probably want more studies, and I get that. But I'm just going to poke back and say, sometimes you just have to start the fire and get moving.
Well, and Dan, I'll side with you and the speaker and the governor in this regard. Let's get the conflict of interest correct. And so if we have to delay a meeting, you know, or if we have to slow down just a little bit, but let's get that all correct. So I'm there for that.
I don't think that's a problem.
Let's talk about Olympia Hills. This is the high-density housing project in the south end of Salt Lake County. I think of it as up in the hills above Harriman, but some of you
say high-density, but really in downtown New York, it's very low-density.
Okay.
So, you know, context is everything in land use, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So 10 units to the acre
is such a minor
high
density relative to what? And I'm going to say high density relative to what's right next to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
But this has been really interesting because it's become, it's really flared for the mayor.
Oh, yeah.
And the county council. Where does this stand? What do you guys, what do our listeners need to know?
I mean, if this was a disease, the CDC is engaged and everybody is fighting like crazy to keep this thing from spreading.
Contain.
Yeah, and contain it, right? So I just look at the mess of the process. And everybody says, well, you know, it's easy to mess up something like this. And, you know, but I would add, if you start looking at things that are coming out of the county and the process for the county's, you know, implementation of projects, and I'm starting to see a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And this is some of the mayors in the Southwest Valley's concern, because they're on me about the issue, is they're saying, look, why do we need this county intermediary for funds on the tax increase and the transportation funds? Why do we need this county intermediary for land use? Why do we need them?
Mm-hmm.
They're just, for the most part, all they're doing is starting problems and not actually solving them.
It's never, I mean, I'm okay with mid-course.
Wait a minute, is that the guy who's just saying, ready, fire, aim, it's perfect? That's what we ought to do, and now you're saying the county is ready, fire, aim, and it's a catastrophe.
I just said just because you're not looking through the scope, basically, it doesn't mean.
Okay, I get the difference.
But to Jim's point, for the Salt Lake County Council to support it 7-1, and then for the mayor to veto
flip
it,
and veto,
and then for the county council to not override it, it shows you either there's a mid-course correction going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Or something. Just
thank goodness Mayor McAdams was there, because it was going to be built. And it was Ben McAdams who stood up.
The council had already recalled it. And recalled the decision. And so it was already kind of on its way to repeal anyway.
It would have been, if Ben hadn't found that little review committee or whatever he found to keep it alive, I think their construction would be starting out there.
Oh, brother.
So
Mayor McAdams stopped the damn thing.
So if we get out of the politics for just a minute.
Darn.
Doggone.
Where do the two of you think we should be putting all these people?
Jim's house, mostly, and everybody gets guaranteed Russian art.
There's only two options, by the way. You can go up or you can go out.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a mix, obviously.
I was going to say,
high density keeps getting voted down.
Yeah.
In the Cottonwood Mall thing, in the Harriman thing.
I believe that we're going to have to take a stewardship-looking approach, right? And I think you're going to see some out, because I don't think there's a way to avoid the out.
This is Eagle Mountain. Saratoga Springs.
Yeah, Park City is one of our ghettos.
I've got a column that's going to say, let's go to northern Utah more and share this growth with Weaver and Box Elder.
We're
going to
see a lot of that, right? But I think we're also going to see redevelopment. I start to look at areas that everybody's saying, hey, we have blighted areas potentially in West Valley. We got them in South Salt Lake. We got them in, you know, Rose Park area. We got a lot of areas that are blighted and have for years been neglected from an infrastructure standpoint. Is there not a way that we can redevelop and start focusing on redevelopment? We're looking at density, right?
Yeah, I love that point. Because I live in Murray, and everything in Murray would be redevelopment. And it's a lot easier to go out to the green fields and just do your thing. But we have areas that are ripe.
And to the Southwest mayor's standpoint, no one on the Salt Lake County Council lives south of 7200 South, and none of them live west of I-15. And so they're all saying, hey, we know that you look at this problem and you see us as the solution as a greenfield, but we look at the infrastructure and the greenfield's not here to support it.
Jim, leave it to Dan to know that little stat about nobody being west of the freeway.
Right, exactly.
Oh, if you think for a second that the mayors in the Southwest, even in the south part of the valley, are not wearing me out on the county issues right now, I will grandly grant everyone Russian art.
Jim, we also got more Salt Lake County News approved a 0.25% sales tax increase for transportation.
Boo.
Yeah, talk about profiles and courage. Mm-hmm. That was left up to the county to decide. What, are we going to take this or not? And guess what they did? They punted and said, well, we're not going to actually vote on it. We're going to see what two-thirds of the people in the county cities believe, and then we'll come back and blah, 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 blah. We're not seeing a lot of courage on local government, if you ask me.
Are large purchases exempt from that?
From sales tax?
From this 0.25. In other words, say you're buying a car and Davis County has a dealership and Salt Lake County has a dealership. Are large purchases exempt from this 0.25?
Cars have a different sales tax structure, so yes.
Okay, that makes me feel better about it.
Yeah.
I don't like to distort market decisions.
I don't either, but I also don't like the idea that, you know, that municipalities get point of sale transactions on vehicles anyways or on these large purchases. It doesn't make sense.
Do both of you think UTA's turning the corner at all?
No.
Yes.
There's the left and the right. Okay, make your case, Dan, and Jim, you do the same.
Well, I mean, you can paint the bird if you want. It's still a seagull, right? And at the end of the day, you can paint it all you want. Call it whatever color you want to do it. It is still a seagull, and it is still a problem in search of a solution. And I, honestly, just changing how things are done from a governance standpoint 3 weeks ago, right, was when laws became actually officially laws, taking that standpoint and saying, well, in 3 weeks we got a brand new organization? Come on. That's not the way it works.
At least he's not calling it a magpie.
I know. I tried to stay local with the relevance. But show me 5 years of performance and I'm ready to invest.
Okay. I mean, I get what you're saying, but I think the potential is there. There was nothing that could have saved it given that old structure.
So
I think we got a shot at it
first?
Now.
Which one are they doing?
Are they what?
Are we firing or aiming first?
There's a theme coming out, isn't there?
That is the theme there. I'll just say from the political middle, honestly, I have never understood all of the outrage about UTA. I really haven't.
Yeah.
I love our transit system. I'm proud of it. I use it.
Where would we be without it?
Makes a huge difference at the University of Utah. It makes a huge difference downtown.
Here's the problem. We built this from the wrong direction. This is my primary complaint about UTA. We have miles of rail. Most of it was built on existing UP rail that was out there anyways, and we acquired. That being said, we have a lot of miles driven or a lot of rail built, but as we were building these stations, we did not require that the uses sustain the train stations. And so as you look up and down the Wasatch Front all the way down each one of these stops, the uses do not support rail. And as a result, you are low on ridership because you still are struggling to solve the last mile.
Because I live by Murray Central and we have a Costco there. And, you know, that's not a rail. Yeah, that's not a rail function. But we do also have Intermountain, regional hospital.
Huge 5 gallon can of refried beans on the track station?
Hey, we got to go to gripes. Dan, do you want to gripe first?
Why do I always get called on first?
Because you don't like to follow Jim because he has such incredible gripes.
And he's so. I will say this, that we are in the midst of trying to deal with complicated tax issues. And everybody's asking for a special session trying to solve them. And there is never enough time to dig into some of these public policy questions, and especially on tax. And I, of course, want more tax time. So that's my gripe.
Jim?
Okay, I'll try to boil this down at 30 seconds. Utah loves to talk about their judges and how good we are. And you know what? We have pretty good judges. One area where a catastrophe as a state is in diversity. The American Constitutional Society for Law and Justice report, Utah ranked 51st out of 51 states in gender and racial diversity. Utah's judiciary is 66% less diverse than the state population, and it's not getting better. In 2018, the governor nominated only 1 out of 7 nominees, 14% were women. And then, just to make it clear, no Hispanics out of 117 judges. This is a shame for the state of Utah, and we ought to change it, and we ought to change it now.
Wow. I'm going to gripe about the state of conservatism in this country, and maybe even in our state, but more in our country. I love limited government. I believe in market economies I believe in free trade. limited regulation, low taxes, and we're spending all of our time talking about these border, you know, discussions, and it's made it and tariffs, you know, on our friends. I don't get it, Dan. I don't know if you share this this pain with me, but that's my gripe: is a conservative movement that seems to have lost its way.
Well, I agree with you. I would just say that the lost its way is something that I fear is a larger systemic problem.
It's more than just conservatives.
People just aren't paying attention. They just aren't. And so the fact that the conservatives can be saying losing cause, I could say the same about the liberals. They're off on a tangent, and everybody's kind of wandering, meandering.
I'd like to end on a positive, but we got to call it there. I'm Natalie Gochner. I've been joined by Jim DeBacchus and Dan McKay. Program is produced by Emily Means. Thanks for listening.